Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. This podcast is a listener-supported podcast, and all of our patrons get additional benefits by joining us. And if you would like to support us, you can do so by visiting www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is the other co-host of Talk Eastern Europe, Maciek Makuski. Hello, Maciek.
Hello, Adam. Hello, listeners. Talk Eastern Europe is also a member of Europod, which is a network of European podcasts debating political and social issues from very different perspectives. I would like also to welcome all of you in the new year, since it's our first episode in 2021.
That's right. We are back for the new year, and I think we have a very interesting topic. So let's get started. So Maciek, happy new year, and it's great to at least hear your voice. Still haven't had a chance to see you yet in 2021.
Adam, hello. Also, happy new year to you and to all our listeners.
Yes.
We are back after a short break, but actually it was mostly break for our listeners from listening our podcast. But we did some work in the meantime. We were thinking about future episodes. We were thinking whom we should invite soon, what topics are the most important right now. I know you also spend some time on planning some fundraising activities for us. So, I think now we are ready to really start this year at Talk Eastern Europe.
Yeah, and I think we picked a very good topic for the first episode of this year, which, of course, is the situation in Russia after the poisoning of Alexei Navalny last year and his recovery in Germany and his return, which took place last weekend, along with his immediate arrest, followed by huge protests that broke out in Russia. Of course, a topic that's covered a lot in the West. But I think what we really wanted to do in this episode is to try to get a more deeper discussion from the social aspect and understand what Russians are thinking about the situation with Alexei Navalny, their attitudes toward Putin, and of course the video, which the YouTube movie, which was released right before Navalny returned, or as he was returning, on Putin's palaces. Maciek, did you have a chance to watch the film?
Yeah, I've watched also previous movies of Navalny, so I also recommend to all our listeners who haven't seen it yet to also check it. It's quite long, as far as I remember, but it's worthy to check it. To check it and simply to have own opinion about that. But yeah, it's quite amazing work, and the quality of this work is really high. So Adam, I just want to add to your introduction, because as you said, we are aware that the topic is well covered by international media, and we rather wanted not to talk too much about Navalny himself, because mm-hmm. I think it's pretty easy to get to learn about him if somebody needs that. But we invited Russian journalist Katerina Fomina. She works from Istoris Media Koda, and she has worked as a special reporter for the Novaya Gazeta, and it's currently based in Moscow. And she explained to us a bit, what is the social base of this protest, which seemed to me very interesting aspect of this process, not only protest, but process, political mm-hmm. process taking place in Russia. And I hope that in this interview we managed to do that.
Yeah, I think it was very interesting. We'll talk maybe a little bit more about it after the interview, because we don't want to spend too much time giving everything away, but Maciek and I both did the interview, and it was, for me, very interesting to hear not only her perspective, but she gives us perspective from different Russians' point of view, including her grandmother, as well as young TikTokers who she has interviewed for other reports that she wrote for her media. So I think there's a lot in this interview to listen to and to get some insight into exactly what's going on from at least from her perspective and from the perspectives of the people that she's been interviewing for her own work. So I think this is quite interesting, and definitely we will see. You know, things are changing, and Russia is kind of in a very difficult position at the moment with the pandemic and the economic situation, which is really stagnant. I think, you know, a lot of Russians are starting to feel the stagnation of the economic and the economic situation in the country is starting to have an effect. And we do have, of course, and this is not what we talk about in the interview, but something to keep in mind, Maciek, the Duma elections are coming up later this year, I think in the fall, probably around September. And those elections for sure are going to be they're going to be managed by the authorities and the Kremlin as much as possible. But when you have so much discontent in the society, it's going to be very interesting to watch how that whole process unfolds. So I think we will definitely be watching that as well here at Talk Eastern Europe.
Absolutely. This topic will be discussed here by us. But as you said, the elections are interesting, probably not because of the expected result, which probably we know, but of course something unexpected may happen. But it's interesting to observe as a process in more broad understanding of this term. Yeah, how Russian society will be participating in the elections, and also how this Navalny's tactic of voting, let's call it like that.
Smart voting, he calls it, yeah.
Smart voting, and all his campaign aimed at enhancing people to vote for anybody just to participate in the electoral process, yeah? No matter for whom you really want to vote, but of course not for
Pro-Kremlin ruling party.
So definitely these are topics which require our attention.
So definitely recommend to our listeners to follow and follow along, and we will do our best to also follow along. Check out also, of course, we have plenty of coverage on the New Eastern Europe website and in the New Eastern Europe magazine as well. So Maciek, with that, I think it's would be a good opportunity now to move on to our interview with Katerina Fomina. And joining us now is Katerina Fomina, who is a Russian journalist with iStories Media, previously with Koda, as well as working for Novaya Gazeta in Moscow. And welcome, Katerina, to Talk Eastern Europe.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Hello, everyone.
So thanks again for joining us. And I am really interested in hearing your thoughts and your reporting from the situation in Russia. Obviously, we've all seen the images of the protests which took place last weekend, and we're very familiar, of course, with the Western reaction to the protests in Russia. The European Union and the U.S. are calling for freeing of political prisoners, including Alexei Navalny. They've called for more sanctions against Russia and so forth. But I'm wondering how these protests were perceived in Russia, especially by the people and officials as well. So I think maybe I would like to start by asking about the atmosphere in the Russian society before the protests. In your opinion, what triggered the people and what made them come out into the streets despite the risks that it takes to protest? And do you think it was the investigation into Putin's corruption, the situation with Navalny, or a more general dissatisfaction with how things are going in the country?
This situation is pretty complex. And they need to start that the last year was the year of pandemic, and it really shows that there are so many areas in Russia which are not prepared for such extreme situations, especially medical care system. And it also shows that our authorities do not care about citizens, because they absolutely did not support small businesses, people who involved in their personal activities. Like, they supported somehow those who are working for governmental areas, but the rest of people, some of them, they lost absolutely everything. And it also showed the relationship from our authorities, how they treat us, how they actually do not care about us. Yeah, and I think people were pretty exhausted after the first wave, because we were obliged to sit at home, not as long as, for example, the rest of Europe, but economical situation in Russia is absolutely awful, and some people sharing their flats with, you know, elders, with grandmothers and grandfathers, and then you blocked with all this huge family at home. You feel tired after this, and you have no money to support your family. And for some people, this was the trigger. But I want to say about two last triggers, about poisoning of Navalny and about the investigation, which were published later. So, first of all, this poisoning was showed on TV as something... Actually, it was not said that Navalny was poisoned, and it was said, like, you know, he had some problems with alcohol, or some problems with you know, his internal system, and our Omsk doctors saved his life, and this was funny and absurd. Yeah, and the second one, the investigation about Putin's palace in Gelendzhik, it's south of Russia, and I checked before our recording, and now this investigation had more than 100 million views on YouTube, and almost everyone in Russia who has internet actually discussed and watched this video. And if you watched this video, I hope you did, because it's such a, I don't know, guilty pleasure to look at these interviews. And it looks so surreal, like we are watching Netflix, because we can't even imagine that our president has his own aqua discotheque, as it called, a special place with a swimming pool, and I don't know, the place they can gather with his friends and dancing in the water, and it's so funny. And yeah, they see that this person has so many things, and we see that there is no such term. I mean, we see that there is no such term as enough for these people. They are buying, we are spending our taxes, they are building new palaces, and today we published the investigation about Chechen's president, Ramzan Kadyrov, and his family, who actually has huge flats in the center, like not the center, but in very expensive houses in Moscow, and nothing is discussing this. No one is knowing about this, because they are hiding it. They're hiding this information from their citizens, and this situation is absolutely not transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one more trigger for the society to go outside was Navalny's return, that Navalny came back home, and after this he was arrested. Actually, for some people it was the expression of real patriotism, because for the years of Putin's ruling, this word patriotism actually became something, you know, kitschy, something weird, something even cringe, because the term patriots is always used for people who are serving this government, and it's something, you know, not usual to use, but now they see that they saw the real expression of patriotism than the person who actually I think understood that he would be arrested, and then coming back to country, he did it because he wants to live in this country.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and I think we'll come back in a moment about the video. Which we will also, I think we will link for our listeners, so when they're listening to this, they'll have a chance to watch it if they haven't yet, because like you said, it really is like a Netflix film almost. But I'm curious about the protest. This is something that has been kind of in my mind, I'm wondering whether or not there was any influence of the situation in Belarus and the Belarusian protests. Did they play any role in inspiring young Russians who are fed up with the situation in the country? What do you think?
Look, I think that there is no direct influence, but we actually saw the picture of strong people against their dictator who are not afraid of going outside, who are not afraid of police brutality. It was some sort of inspiration, but as you know, they are not succeed. But I think they gave the impulse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's continue this topic, but I would like to focus now on the more Kremlin's reaction to the protests, because it was Dmitry Peskov, Putin's spokesperson and press secretary, who has argued that there were just a few people in the streets when compared to the amount of people who vote and support Putin. So how would you comment this statement? Because what we have seen, on the contrary, it was rather that the protests are not limited to capital city or St. Petersburg, that the protests took place also in other cities. So what do you think about that?
Look, for those who were outside the last week and who saw by their own eyes that what was going on streets, this statement is absolutely funny. And I think it's impossible to understand that it's different measures. We are taking different, you know, expressions of support, because I think that no one from those who voted for Putin, from Putin voters, will go for him outside to suffer from police violence. Probably they are majority, but they are passive majority. To check this hypothesis, I actually called before our recording to my grandmother, my babushka, who is who turned 95 in January. And I actually checked if she knows something about these protests. And she actually passively supports Putin, because she grown up in Soviet times, in Soviet Union, and she used to live with one ruler. She actually cried when the first president of Russia died. She is the representative of this passive majority. And she said that all these people who went outside are too young to make any changes in this country. They use violence against police. And she actually quoted me the agenda which were announced on federal channels. And this is the problem. And I think the majority who is supporting Putin receiving the information about what's going on inside the country from the federal channels. But at the same time, they actually see what's going on with, you know, with their salaries, with their pensions, patients. because my babushka, she received a gift from Putin for her birthday, actually. It was very cheap clock with a postcard with his printed signature, like congratulations, blah, blah, blah. And she was pretty happy because it was the sign of attention to her. I think she understood how small her pension. She's 95, but she's receiving $150 per month. Wow. And she went through the Second World War. She used to work for the state for her whole life, and now she's receiving such a small.
Did she live in Moscow?
Yeah, she lived in Moscow with my mom. Yeah, and I think because she is living with my mom, and the rest of spending of money is lying on my mom, she possibly can't, can't say if she has a small or not salary, because
right.
My mom is treating her, feeding her. Yeah, but look, this average pension is 1/5 of toilet brushes staying at Putin's palaces and some buildings also at that territory in Gilenjik. And this is funny because, look, maybe some old people can understand that, our president have the palace, but I think they can't compare and they can't believe that they are receiving per month as much money as Putin can spend on 1/5 of his toilet brush. And actually a toilet brush became some sort of unofficial symbol of this protest. Some people went on streets holding toilet brush as a symbol of of what they are not agree. They are using plastic brushes costing not 700 euros.
Right.
This is ridiculous. But answering your question, there was not the minority on streets, because many people, they are actually afraid of going outside. They are afraid of police brutality. They are afraid of going in front of police, even in peaceful situation. And I heard it so many times, and I interviewed teenagers who decided to go to took part in these rallies, and they said, "Look, I'd better go nearby some sort of maniacs than to go than to meet policemen in the center of my city, because I don't know that I can what he can do with me. He can he can say that I'm carrying drugs and put drugs on my pocket, and no one will help me." Yeah, so this is the reality, and there are so many people who are not agree with this, and there are so many people in governmental system like doctors and teachers, because they see how small their salaries, but it is said that if they go in outside, if they go into protest, they will be fired. Mm. And it's already happening. Teachers who went to protest, they fired.
Do you think it will stop more people joining to the protests? Or it's already too big to fall? I mean, the protests.
We actually understand clearly that after one rally, nothing will be changed. Like Putin, we have no illusion that Putin will watch YouTube, or I don't know. He's not actually using the internet. He is watching what their helpers is providing to him and showing to him. We have no such illusion that he will say, "Oh my God, people are not supporting me. I'm going to resign." No, because he's also he also believed that all these people are supported by, you know, international security services, by so-called West, by United States. But I've been there, and I know that all these people are not paid by someone. They were on the street because it was their own will.
And we've seen reports that thousands of people were arrested or detained for their participation in the protests. What do you think their fate will be? And is there any kind of assistance that NGOs or civil society can offer?
Look, it's it's a funny thing, but not funny at all, that the majority of our special detention facilities in Moscow are overcrowded. And people who actually have administrative arrests for 10 days or 15 days, they simply have no place to stay, because they are driving these young people to these special facilities, to these so-called prisons. But then they finding out that they have no camp, they have no rooms for these people. Wow. And we even have a story from Moscow that 10 or even more young people spend the whole night in the police bus, because the police could not find any facility for them. And yeah, now we can only predict what will happen with them. And some of them could possibly become defendants in criminal proceeding, like, for example, for beating police or for taking part in these rallies. Because now we already have about, can you imagine, 20 criminal cases open all around Russia. And some of the brightest political activists are already arrested, and so they are possibly become defendants. And asking or answering the second part of your question, the civil society is uniting, and we have so many initiatives which at first counting how many people were arrested, because, for example, when your relative is arrested, he could not tell you, because against the law, policeman taking his phone and he stay for a night at the police office without, you know, not letting know to his parents or his relatives that he is there. And our human rights defenders organization, which is called Over There in Four, counted that there were 4,000 arrested people during the last weekend. And yeah, at the same time, people collecting money to cover fines, some NGOs providing independent lawyers, and some of them even ready to go to the European Court of Human Rights to protect their right to, for freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom of going outside and express themselves.
You have underlined that young people participated or are participating in the protests against Putin and the system, and of course we have seen that also on these footages, pictures from the protests, and I have an impression that it's quite new factor for Russian politics that youngsters are now so involved in this social eruption of this content. And how did it happen? How do you think, or why do you think young people, teenagers, are now more interested in Russian politics than they were before?
Yeah, but in the beginning, I want to highlight that it's the huge speculation that the majority of those who are going outside are teenagers and kids, because the surveys said that the majority are people from 25 and older, and only, I think, 3 or 4% are underage teenagers, underage
okay.
people.
So they are young, but not teenagers. Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. and they are my age. But I also wanted to say about teenagers, because some of them, for sure, they could not take part in rallies, because before that day, some schools and some universities, they introduced obligatory classes in schools, and they said if you not attend there, so you'll be kicked off from the university or from the school, and you will have problems. But look, these are people, children who actually lived the whole life with Putin. And they see no one another as president. Okay, they have Medvedev for like 4 years, but everyone understood that Medvedev is simply no one, and he's just he will be changed by Putin again. And these young people, they have no fear, because they have no heritage. They have no Soviet heritage of fear. They do not see repressions. They do not see war. They have nothing to lose. And as I said, I interviewed young TikTokers for iStories Media. And actually, each of teenager who wanted and who expressed who wanted to go outside, each of them, they had their own story. And they have their own motivation. For example, the young girl from Yekaterinburg, she said that her parents are lawyers, but after the introduction of unfair election, they could not be lawyers, political lawyers anymore, because they were under pressure. They were pushing to falsificate the election, but she said that my parents, they are too honest, they are supporting fair election, and they do not want to take part in this falsification. And she said that now her father is simply drinking, because he lost the hope, and her mother is driving a taxi, because they need to earn money to cover her study in the university. Yeah, and I think all these children, they have their own reasons. And the main thing I want to highlight, that they have no fear. If you go through the TikTok feed, you'll see that these children, they are making jokes about, you know, being imprisoned, being beaten by police. And this world, this situation in Russia became so absurd. So these people, these young people can simply laughing on it, and they have nothing to do but make memes from it. Putin's pictures, they're making memes from Navalny, and they're saying that Navalny, they are crush, and they're in love with him, and his family is a role model for them, because they see a very tender relationship between Navalny and his wife Yulia. You know, they can't say that they will be punished and after taking part in these rallies, but now they see that they have nothing to lose, because I mean, if you're born in a poor or average family, you have no way to, you know, to become richer, because all good places, all good working places are already occupied by sons or daughters of representatives from our administrations, authorities, and they see that their destiny is some sort of prescribed. Yeah, they are simply going for their future.
So it's actually quite a difference between the young generation and the older generation, like your grandmother, for example. And also, I think very new this kind of almost depressing mentality that there's nothing to lose anymore, so they have nothing to fear, as you mentioned.
And I also want to say, you know, when I was in school, we actually were not involved in political processes. As this generation involved, because look, when they have the election, all teachers, doctors, and those who are working for government, they are serving on election offices, and they are responsible for this falsification. And these children, they can't go through this. They know that, for example, your teacher of maths or your teacher who's teaching you how to be a good person is actually falsificating this election. And again, as I said about Putin, they have nothing to respect for. They can't respect their teachers, because their teachers should be their moral orienters. But, you know, they can simply make jokes of them, but there is no respect.
That's very interesting.
If I may ask one more question about that, because I am thinking right now that globally, in recent years, young people became more active. It was especially visible last year, and maybe 2019 also, in many different countries. But young people were involved and active in all social movements related to climate change and environmental protections. And the question here I have is do you think that young people in Russia also see that young people across the world are more active right now, and maybe this is a factor that also enhance people in Russia to protest, because maybe young people in Russia see that the system is closed, focus on itself, and politicians in Russia do not deal with problems which are important for younger generations.
I got you, and I can agree, because this generation, they actually live online. So these people, they are receiving information from social media. They actually, one girl whom I interviewed, she said that I read news. She said, I do not read news. I'm going on TikTok. And then I see a funny joke about something which I can't understand. I realize that it's a joke. It's a political joke about some events took place recently. And I'm going to Google. For example, I see a meme about, I don't know, poisoning Navalny. Actually, it's a huge trend. Many people, many young people, teenagers on TikTok, they are making joke on being poisoned. It's absolutely absurd. Look, and now we already, these people, they are destigmatizing the death. They're destigmatizing their freedom because they are not afraid of being sent to prison. And they see what's going on in different countries, because they subscribed on influencers from abroad, and they see how free they are. Maybe they subscribe not only on, you know, political influencers. They could follow I don't know, some famous teenagers, and they see and they inspired by them because they see how freely these people express themselves, how they can, I don't know, allow themselves to go outside to criticize everyone, how actually their parents treated them. Because here in Russia, we still see the generation which is raised by people with a Soviet background. And many, many things are forbidden for this young generation. And, you know, it's cognitive dissonance then people see the ecological relationship between parents and teenagers, and they actually smart guys, and they're thinking, look, we also want such relationship, and we see nearby videos about Navalny with young people who are supporting Navalny, and videos with, you know, propaganding healthy relationship with your partners, with your parents, with everyone. And I think we can extend this this phenomenon on relationships with the government. These young people, they do not want to be harassed and abused by their parents as well. They do not want to be harassed by their government and the president they actually did not vote for. So yeah, I think this generation is, they are free. They are not afraid of talking about their problems, about their mental problems. We, for years, we have such a system in our government that we can't say something bad about your family, about your state, because we used to live in the atmosphere of fear. We knew that if we say something wrong, then policeman or, I don't know, your boss will come for you and will treat you bad because of this. But these people, they have absolutely different moral values, these young people. So I think they can, as I already said, only make memes from Putin's palace and simply love on him.
It's very interesting. We're getting close to the end, so maybe I'll come to the last question, because we've been talking a lot about Navalny and his influence and how people's attitudes are towards him. But maybe we should have one question about the fate and the current status of Navalny himself. We know that in Russia, many high-ranking politicians, including Putin, try to avoid this topic and try to avoid mentioning the name Alexei Navalny. He was even referred to by Putin last year as the Berlin patient when he was being treated in Germany for the poisoning. So what do you think, what kind of support, if you could have some sense of the support for Navalny in society, does he truly represent some sort of strong political force in the country? And what is also the kind of the current status of what's happening? We know that was he arrested? Is it look like he's going to be put into prison for a long time, or how does it seem right now from today's perspective?
Yeah, you know, the most popular question when you're talking with your babushkas, with your grandparents, is if not Putin, then who? In Russian, it sounds like "если не Путин, то кто?" And it is funny because the fundament of this question is that this system of assessing to the real politics is absolutely broken, because young people or people with a positional point of view, they have no opportunity to enter this, you know, political system, and the institution of non-system opposition is broken, and deputies they see in our state Duma who are representing so-called opposition, They are also receiving money from the state. They are also supporting Putin. And they could not be called the real opposition. And then someone is asking me, if not Putin, then who? I'm saying anyone, because actually we are going outside, and these young people going outside because we want to see the changes. We want to see the real democracy. We want to see the list of candidates for president, and we want to have more than one name at in this list. And I think that we can't say that if Putin will leave, then Navalny will come, and he became the new dictator. No. We are asking, and our demand is to have and to establish the real democracy. If they see that Navalny can't handle it, if he is not worthy for being, I don't know, maybe not president, but a mayor or governor or something like that, we can choose another one. We can vote for another one in 4 years. But now, can you imagine living for 20 years with Putin? It's absolutely unbelievable. And I actually saw some other leaders as Yeltsin, and this is it. But even for me, it's so so weird and so strange to live inside the situation. Then my vote, then my voice meaning nothing. And I actually do not agree with this government. And personally, I do not support Navalny, but I want him to have this chance, to become a competitor in this fight for the political place. And the main answer on this question, there are many young people who are actually very talented, very smart, having really good education, but they have no access to the huge audience, which is provided by the federal channels. And they are all having their activities online, but I think their potential audience, their potential voters, is the younger generation, and they are also spending their time online. And I think in a few years they will meet each other, and people like my babushka probably also will change her mind, because she sees that I'm a talented journalist, but she can't give me the opportunity to vote for myself. But I think in a few years she will see that there are so many people as me, young and ready to change something in their country. And I think then she will change her mind, because somewhere deeper in her soul, she also wanted the better future for me. But she is afraid of something bad.
Well, let's hope that better future does come. This has been a really fascinating conversation. Maciek, do you have anything else that you wanted to ask before we say goodbye?
I would love to, but I think we have a lot, and it was a pleasure to talk to you, Katrina. I hope it's not the last time you visit us here at Talk Eastern Europe. Because really, I have an impression that we could continue in many different directions.
Yeah, and it's so hard to sometimes get the voices from, you know, to really learn what's happening. In the Western discourse, the discussions about Russia are so limited, and it's really good to hear this kind of discussions from what people are thinking about. And even if it's, you know, not just young people, but also babushka, and sharing, you know, the different attitudes.
Yeah, exactly. Social perspective, not power politics. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Katerina, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And that was our interview with Katerina Fomina, who is a Russian journalist currently with iMedia, an independent investigation outlet based in Moscow. Very interesting project. I had a chance to look through their materials. Definitely recommend, and we will link to it as well in the podcast. Maciek, I thought it was very interesting, the whole stories that she had to share with us, including the fact that she interviewed these TikTokers who TikTok in Russia. And when I hear the stories about how young people get the news in Russia, the first place they do is through social media, such as ones like TikTok. And it's oftentimes in the form of a joke or a meme. And then if there's something that they don't understand that everybody's kind of laughing about, then they will turn to Google and read about it. I have a sense that this is very much the trend of young people all over the world, not just in Russia. But it does show that, you know, the Russian youth, while they are maybe, you know, physically less connected to us because of the economic situation plus the sanctions and all that, in terms of digitally, I think the younger generation of Russians are definitely just as connected to the world as other young people in other countries, including our own Western countries. So for me, it was a very interesting interview. I hope our listeners enjoyed it. Those are some of my thoughts coming out. Maciek, what do you think about the situation going forward with Navalny and the political situation and social situation in Russia?
First of all, I want to add one more thing to your comments, because something what was, I think, not mentioned in the interview is also the role of internet communicators, and Telegram especially is very popular in Russia. So this is also a new tool of communication, also including political communication. So this is also this, you know, one aspect of the impact of technology.
Absolutely.
Let's call it broadly political process. Yeah. So I think that's also interesting. And that's also what I would like to discuss more this year, here at Talk Eastern Europe. And about Navalny, you know, it's really hard to answer that question. I think, you know, if you talk about like, today, it's really hard to imagine that he will be able like to defeat Putin or you know to be a really political opponent for him for the regime in Russia. But he is already a game changer. Yeah. So after you know after I think that after Mikhail Khodorkovsky. Like moved out from Russia, we didn't have such important figure, yeah, among the on the opposition side, and true. And Navalny is starting something new, which is you know important, interesting, but on the other hand, we still don't know too much about his vision of Russia, yeah, what it could be. We know something, yeah, but it's still this rather process that he's in the process of fighting with the regime, not building it. I mean, not building.
That's true. Something new, so. Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's a lot of, I think, hypotheticals when it comes to talking about Navalny. And you know, you reminded me of something that I was thinking about the other day. Is I think the return, and this was talked about a little bit in our interview with Katerina, was very interesting, is the return of Navalny, I think, was not fully expected by the Kremlin and Putin. I think, you know, he thought maybe he would be marginalized, kind of opposition voice outside, you know, something like Khodorkovsky is now, or Kasparov is, you know, Garry Kasparov outside Russia. You know, their influence is minimized because they're not inside. And I think Navalny understood that if he's going to have any sort of influence to try to take down the regime, as you say, he has to be within the country, even if he's in prison. There will always be some sort of...
True. I was also thinking about that. And I think after this attempt of assassination, I think that maintaining this popularity really is something essential for him, not only from the political point of view, but really from the point of view of I don't know how to say it, being alive. He has to remain popular, because if he loses it, he can be put in danger, really.
True. That's true. So, that's a good point. Yeah, his popularity is a little bit of a defense mechanism for him. You're right. Yeah,
defense mechanism. I see it like that, and I think to some extent he has no other choice. He has to come back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. Well, we definitely will be watching the situation there and how that plays out. It's going to be quite an interesting year for Russia. I am certain of it. We can wrap up this topic and move on to the final part of the podcast, which is everybody's favorite, hopefully, our announcements. It's the new year. I just want to mention a few things. Maciek, I'm sure you have maybe a couple of things you want to mention, but first and foremost, very important for me and for us here at Talk Eastern Europe and at New Eastern Europe, it's the 10-year anniversary of New Eastern Europe. We launched the magazine back in 2011. It's hard to believe it's already been 10 years, that the time really has flown. But we do have a lot of ideas for some really interesting activities, and I just want to invite all of our listeners out there to help to participate, to join us in celebrating 10 years of New Eastern Europe. We'll have some interesting online events. We will have a crowdfunding campaign, and we will be, of course, revisiting some of the issues that we've been covering over the last 10 years and reviewing and where we were, where we are, and of course, where are we going. A lot has happened in the last 10 years, and I'm sure a lot will happen in the next 10. So New Eastern Europe turns 10. Check it out at our website and stay tuned to that. And the last thing I just wanted to mention before I hand it over to you, Maciek, I'm sure you have some things to say, is that if you missed it, you know, probably the most important development in our region last year, one of the most important developments in the region, our region last year, was the election and protests in Belarus. And we've been following that very closely on the podcast. And we even did a special documentary, audio documentary about Belarus. So if you want to learn more about the country, learn about its contemporary history, learn about the situation in the country and where things are and going, I highly recommend you check out the special documentary that Talk Eastern Europe produced, which is called The Story of Belarus. It's available on a separately, so you'll have to search for it. But we will have links for it, of course, in the notes to this podcast as well.
Yeah, I have two things to announce, but before that, I want to say that this Belarusian revolution that started last year has not ended. And of course, it's still, this is a process that still is taking place. So we will come back to it, I think, very soon, actually. But this documentary series that you mentioned is, I believe, something that allow you to learn a bit more about Belarus as such, you know, about the history of the country, about culture and many other aspects. So in that way, it's I think more universal. It's not only about those those protests that erupted after the election last year.
That's right.
And yeah, what I wanted to say is just that I am really grateful for all support we have from you, especially from our patrons, also from members of our Facebook group. Thank you for all feedback we get from you through different channels. And if you are listening this podcast for first time, And if you like what we do, I would really appreciate if you can recommend it to others, because that's how this project may also develop. And we are all very grateful for this kind of support as well. And I want to also refer to the Facebook group, because we have some plans for this group for this year. And one of this, I think I can Adam reveal this idea.
Sure.
But we will inform about details soon. We are going to organize kind of online debate, maybe small conference, just for all members of our Facebook group. So stay tuned for that. And if you have any ideas, what would you learn, what would you like to discuss in this forum more, of course you can drop us a message, and that will be also a way to prepare the agenda of this special online event.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a great idea, and I really look forward to engaging all of our listeners in that way. And of course, we cannot forget about our Patreon page, which we mentioned in the beginning, and there's always the link in the notes. But I just want to remind everyone that we are listener supported. It's thanks to our listeners who donate via our Patreon page that we are able to invest in our studio, even though that's where Maciek is right now. In the pandemic times, it's a little harder for us to record, but we have plenty of plans for 2021 and getting over this pandemic period. And also, we have instituted a new benefit for all of our Patreon patrons, and that's the special closed Zoom sessions. And we finished 2021 with a special Zoom session with Viktor Martinovich, the Belarusian writer. We hosted him for all of our Patreon patrons, and it was a great event. And we got some ideas for this year as well. So please stay tuned, and we would love to have you join us.
Yeah, Adam, so, and there is one more special reward for patrons, and I think that's what you should.
Of course.
Right now.
And of course, that's the shout out on the podcast. How can I forget that all of our patrons, you know, we are so grateful for them. And I just want to say hello and thank you for joining us to Joseph, Pat, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Amy, Naomi, Sylvia, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Scapegoat, Wilhelm, David, Elizabeth, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, Pierre. Thank you so much for your support. We've had a goal to reach 30 patrons by the end of the year last year. Unfortunately, we only made it to 28, but that's still pretty good for me. But we are still trying to get up to 30 before springtime. So if you're out there and you're listening and you're willing to contribute, even $2 a month helps us build our Patreon community. We'd love to have you join us.
Okay, I think that's it. That's all what we have for you in this episode. I hope you enjoy it. And yeah.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned for many, many more, because we got plenty in the pipeline.
Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Bye.